We deliver tickets, t-shirts, and everything you need to rock. But what you really get is so much more.
FedEx, delivery.
Passion, what we deliver by delivering.
With your money briefing, I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Hey, cryptocurrency bad guys, hear that sound? Those are footsteps from the Feds hot on your heels, and they've been getting louder and louder over the past year. We'll hear from the Journal's financial regulation team in a moment, but first, these money and market stories you should know. The Wall Street Journal Daily Shot column suggests that as 30-year fixed mortgage rates approach 5%, refinancing activity is likely to significantly decline, along with mortgage prepayments. Higher mortgage rates are also likely to further slow the pace of sales of existing homes. Freddie Mac says the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage averaged 4.71% for the week of October the 4th. That's down one basis point from 4.72% the previous week, and that snaps a five-week stretch of gains. And even with that drop, so far this year, the 30-year fixed has averaged 4.47%. That compares to 3.99% at this time last year. A survey by the National Federation of Independent Business indicates a record 37% of small businesses in September reported giving out raises and all forms of compensation to employees in hopes of hiring and retaining needed workers. 38% of all owners reported job openings they could not fill in the current period. That's unchanged from August's record high. Reports of job openings were most frequent in construction, manufacturing, transportation, wholesale trades, and retail, where customers are showing up in large numbers. The lack of qualified applicants is nearing levels attained in the late 1990s, when Y2K produced a surge in demand for computer and programming specialists. And the Wall Street Journal's Real Estate Bureau reports that actor and director Bradley Cooper bought a Greenwich Village townhouse in New York this past spring for $13.5 million. Cooper currently stars in a remake of A Star Is Born with singer Lady Gaga. He bought the townhouse in a very quiet manner, registering the property under what was known as the Cool Trust, which kept the May purchase under wraps. The townhouse is about 4,000 square feet, has six bedrooms, and spans five floors. It also has roughly 1,000 square feet of outdoor space, has reclaimed barn wood floors, French doors opening to a balcony overlooking the garden, a remote-controlled fireplace, a hidden wet bar, and a temperature-controlled wine cellar outfitted for 1,000 bottles. One fly in the ointment amid all the hoopla surrounding cryptocurrencies is the lack of regulation and enforcement in the face of scams and schemes. Well, it appears the spotlight from regulators is being turned up a notch, and Wall Street Journal reporter Gabriel Rubin joins us from Washington with details. So, Gabriel, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission has taken a lot more action and stepped up issuing fines when it comes to cryptocurrency since the start of the Trump administration than it did in previous years. Is that because of an increase in nefarious activities?
I think what you could say is that, to quote the notorious BIG, it's sort of a more money, more problem situation. And cryptocurrencies really weren't all that popular among the retail market until pretty much last year, 2017. The run-up in prices in December saw a lot of new interest in cryptocurrencies. And as a result, there was a lot more retail fraud going on and more sort of uneducated investors getting into the market who are more susceptible to getting caught up in scams. So the fact that we're seeing more enforcement of those scams really is just a result of the increased interest in cryptocurrencies.
And by the way, Gabriel, you have now staked your claim in your money briefing history by the first time we've had a quote from notorious BIG. On the podcast.
Well, he knew quite a bit about markets, apparently.
So thank you for that. You also talk about spoofing in your story in the Wall Street Journal. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. So spoofing is a technique that scammers use. It's the use of algorithms to drive up prices in markets. And essentially, spoofers will make a large set of orders, but then cancel them before they're finalized in order to lure other traders into those markets. And the spoofers can make pretty handsome profits if they bet on which way prices are going to go, because they'll know ahead of time how they expect the market movement to play out. And it's sort of a textbook example of market manipulation and a key focus and theme of the CFTC's enforcement regime, especially as high-frequency trading has become the norm over the last several years.
You know, up to this point, a lack of enforcement and regulation is just one thing that has kept a lot of big players from jumping into the cryptocurrency market.
And I think that's definitely changed over the past year or so. We're seeing a lot more interest by, you know, top Wall Street banks and, you know, venture capitalists in Silicon Valley, et cetera. And a lot of that is because regulators have taken notice and the market is becoming much more professionalized. You know, there are things like trade associations forming where sort of the more legitimate actors in the space understand that they need a set of standards in order for this space to operate above board and be legitimate. And, you know, regulators are at least the CFTC and the SEC are very clear that, you know, cryptocurrencies, there's nothing wrong with cryptocurrencies. It's the, you know, like any other market, there's a share of fraud and there's a share of bad actors, but that doesn't mean that the space overall is a bad thing. And certainly going forward, I think we'll see it mature into a market similar to equities or other commodity markets.
Yeah, you know, cryptocurrency, it gets a lot of the headlines, and patrolling the cryptocurrency bad guys is just one component, as you point out, in the CFTC and the SEC's body of work. But this spectrum of trading scams, it keeps them pretty busy.
I mean, there's one of the things that doesn't really get the headlines, as you mentioned, is just sort of basic retail fraud. There's still an immense amount of precious metal fraud out there where small-time criminals essentially will defraud people out of their money by, you know, claiming to be selling gold or silver, things that we hear about all the time, actually, just not sort of in headline news. And that takes up a lot of the CFTC's time and is something that they take very seriously. And if you look at the overall caseload that they took on this year, of the 83 cases that they either settled or filed in court, roughly 30 were sort of basic retail fraud cases. So it's definitely something that they're still very concerned with and that, you know, gets to the core of maintaining integrity in markets.
Can you give us an idea of the amount of fines that have been doled out by the CFTC in the past year since we have seen the ramp up in enforcement?
So this year, which is the first full fiscal year of the Trump administration with Trump-appointed regulators at the CFTC, saw roughly $900 million in fines doled out. Now, those numbers, it goes beyond the numbers in this case because a lot of those cases started far earlier. Some of them date back to the financial crisis. In fact, some of the biggest ones date back to the financial crisis, including major settlements with banks like Bank of America, Deutsche Bank, and JP Morgan, among others, related to the manipulation of interest rate benchmarks from the period from 2007 to 2012. So a lot of these cases take a very long time to work their way through the system, and only when those cases are finalized do we see them in the fiscal year numbers. So the uptick in enforcement numbers is certainly significant, but you really got to delve into the numbers to see why it's significant.
Do the increases in enforcement and penalties seem like the norm to you going forward?
I think it's tough to say. I think that, especially as I mentioned with the crisis, the financial crisis era cases, it's hard to tell how many of those are still in the pipeline, and those tend to be, you know, many, many millions of dollars. You know, there was a range from $30 to $90 million in terms of those fines, and there were several of those. So, in, you know, if the total is $900 million and you have five cases that are between $30 to $90 million, that's a good chunk of the overall total. So the overall monetary value of the fines may actually decline, but I don't think in the following years. But I don't think that we should necessarily look at that and say, oh, the CFTC is pulling back on enforcement. It might just be the nature of the cases they're taking on.
All right. That is Wall Street Journal reporter Gabriel Rubin, part of our financial regulation team here at the Journal, joining us from our Washington Bureau. Gabriel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York.